And this is Open Line Time on Coast to Coast AM. Those of you on hold, I'll get right to you when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. Boy, I never thought I'd say this, but I think this year is going by faster than last year. And last year just seemed to zoom by for me. Let's go to our wild card line. Fred is in San Pedro, California. Welcome to the program. Go ahead, Fred.
Oh, hey, George. You may not remember me, but I talked with you last time was about my meeting Jimmy Stewart and his wife around Christmas time a few years ago.
Right, and I think, did I try to have you do a Jimmy Stewart impression at that time?
Yeah, I did, yeah. And then you did yours for me.
That's right. That's right.
That was just fun, that was great. And you know, when I was listening tonight and I heard Scott come on talk about comedy, I had to call because there's a friend of mine who's doing a biography about me, believe it or not. This guy, he's a documentarian, I guess a documentary filmmaker.
Yeah.
And so he's putting some stuff little by little on the internet. And as soon as I get all the, you know, I'd love to send you the link, you know, I'll email you. And because what I do is I tap dance as well as doing impressions and comedy. So I like to incorporate comedy with the tap dancing. But as soon as I get all that stuff down, I'll email you. But I memories started coming back about comedy and about movies. And I've got an Abbott and Costello story and a Laurel and Hardy story for you.
All right. I love it. And by the way, I'll put a link up on our website when you get that video for me.
Oh, that would be great. And I think you'll really get a kick out of it because I mix the comedy in with the tap dancing. And because I grew up as a big fan of Donald O'Connor and Ray Bolger, and they always had that great physical comedy with their dancing, those great facial expressions. And so I remember when this guy, a friend of mine, said, well, we're going to do an interview. I want to interview you. Just think about, you know, when you were growing up, things that inspired you about comedy. And all of a sudden, all these memory floodgates started opening up. And I remember the very first comedy that I went to see at a movie theater. And all of us kids in our elementary school, at least in my class, we won a trip to the Rialto movie theater in downtown L.A. And I'm only a few years younger than you. I don't know if you remember this, but in the 50s and 60s, a lot of these movie theaters, they were re-releasing a lot of old movies.
Oh, yeah, they sure were.
And now when I was about 5 or 6 years old, we got a trip, and I don't know, I think it was on the weekend during a matinee, went to see an Abbott and Costello movie, and all these other kids, the theater was flooded with school kids to see this Abbott and Costello movie called Whodunit, which is probably the funniest movie they ever did. It was actually the first movie they did where it wasn't a musical. It was like a film noir, you know, like one of those black and white murder mysteries with those great shadows. And so they play soda jerks who were trying to solve a murder. And from beginning to end, every frame of that movie, every kid was just laughing. I was laughing hysterically. And from beginning to end, because it was just it just did not let up. And so I thought, well, gee, was it because I was a kid and I thought anything was funny? And I rented the movie a few years ago, and it still holds up. I mean, it is probably the funniest movie they ever did. But every kid in that theater did not stop laughing. And
one funny scene after the next.
Oh, one funny. And it had all these great actors in their prime. I mean, they're at the top of their game. There's guys like, if you remember William Bendix from Life of Riley.
Oh, sure do. Yeah.
And he was so good at playing. He was like the 1940s version of John Lithgow. You know, he could play a sadistic, mean serial killer, and then he could turn right around and do slapstick comedy, and he was hilarious. And so everybody in that movie was just great. And the movie, if they re-released it now at a movie theater, I think even in black and white, it would still hold up. And then the other movie story was when I moved to Hawthorne, California. I was probably 9 years old. And a really good friend of mine that I went to fourth and fifth grade with, his name was Danny Gosser. So if he's listening, I just wanted to give a shout out to Danny Gosser. Him and I went to see a movie at a theater called Laurel and Hardy's Laughing 20s. And it was a compilation of Laurel and Hardy's silent films. And they showed highlights of their slapstick, you know, with the pie throwing and the slipping on the banana peel and all the great sound effects. There used to be this booth. And I don't know if you came across these when you were a kid in going to the movies, but there used to be something that we called the crying booth. And it was when parents had kids that misbehaved and would cry and yell, they would be taken to this booth that was soundproof.
We had that in Catholic Church.
Oh, okay.
Where they had the crying room.
Right, the crying room.
Yeah, that's
where
they took them.
And they had one at this movie theater. And so my friend Danny and I, when we would leave, we'd see kids in there. We knew they were crying, but we couldn't hear them. So we were kind of mean, and what we did actually came back and got us. You know, it was like, you know, karma could be a real pain. We would, of course, I was ashamed to say this, but we used to make fun of those kids. We'd walk by and we would mimic them crying, you know, and we go, wah, you know, because they're in there crying, and then they're crying even more because we're making fun of them. Well, what happened was when we watched the movie The Laughing Twenties, we were laughing so hard in that movie theater, and the usher came down and said, you know, you kids better quiet down. And we shut up. But then we could not stop laughing because the movie was so funny. And we were laughing harder than anyone else. And the usher came down again and said, you kids, if I have to come down here again, if you guys are laughing again, guess where you're going? And we thought, yeah, right. Well, we were laughing and laughing so hard that the usher came back down and said, okay, come on. So we went with the usher, and he put us in the crying room. So now we were the ones in the crying room. But we weren't crying. We were laughing. And all the other kids walked by, and they were mimicking us now. So it was like, you know, what goes around comes around, I guess. But those were the two comedy stories. And, yeah, so when Scott – and I think I know where that laughing all the way to the bank, I think I know where that came from.
Where'd it come from?
I think from what I heard one time, and this might be just an urban myth, is that there used to be I think he was a comic or some sort of an act where he was a laugher. And this might not be true, but he made a lot of money doing this laughing bit, and they thought the guy was crazy. And then they said, yeah, well, you know, look at how much he's making. I think he's laughing all the way to the bank. So that might be where that came from.
I love it. Well, definitely get us that link, and we'll get it up there for you at coasttocoastam.com. Some more stories coming out, by the way, on the Malaysia Airlines Flight 370. It's one of those duh moments. The prime minister out there says, we have decided to refocus on passengers and crew on board after the data indicated the plane deviated due to deliberate action. Hello. We've only been saying that since the beginning of this investigation, and we're not even there. Now, they stopped short of calling it a hijacking. Of course it was a hijacking. And they're still saying that they believe that it's probably crashed into the Indian Ocean. I wouldn't be so quick to jump on that. But they finally have said, we're going to look at the passengers and crew on board. That's the pilots, of course. And then who else? Something that they should have been doing for a long time. It makes no sense. Malaysia, folks, has botched this investigation big time. Okay, back we go. We go to Powell River, Canada. Eric's with us on Coast to Coast. Hey, Eric, thank you for holding. Go ahead.
Oh, hi, George. Thanks for taking the call here.
Sure.
I just wanted to talk. Have you ever seen a laser light show where one laser beam, with one laser beam, words and images can be projected? Have you ever
seen that? Yeah, I've seen that. I've seen that. As a matter of fact, I think David Copperfield does some of that, too, in some of his shows.
Yeah, so lasers can be shot out in many directions at the same time. So, like, imagine, like, a weapon system with either space-based or, but probably aircraft-based, I guess, where a high-powered laser can be made to home in on specific targets such as cell phones or RFID, bank and credit cards. So it seems to me like in a future conflict is going to involve the heavy use of that sort of thing, perhaps, and the drones as well, and the micro drones that can home in on cell phones and RFID cards.
Oh, the high technology is going to be all over that. You're right.
So the point I'm making is this. If for whatever reason American militias and patriots are forced to defend themselves then the first thing they're going to have to do is get rid of anything that can give their position away, right? And they're going to have to also consider making themselves invisible to facial and speech recognition technology as well.
They're going to start backing out of that stuff altogether. And that's it. That's the only way they're going to be able to hide from us, right?
So it seems to me like if American patriots are ever forced into a guerrilla-style war, God forbid, I mean, they're going to have to seriously consider the new technology and how to avoid being sitting ducks, like, also find ways to pull the plug on Big Brother, the Big Brother infrastructure as well, I guess.
Oh, that is very possible. I mean, there's no doubt about that. But the problem is, you pull the plug on Big Brother, you're also pulling it on us. I mean, we're up a creek on that one. Next up, we go to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. It's Pete's turn. Hey, Pete, thanks for holding. Go ahead.
Thank you, George. This missing plane, so many people captivated by the story. Now, the prime minister came out tonight, as you said, that they determined that an individual did take away the communications of the plane and all the tracking devices. In 2014, I cannot believe that that's even possible, that governments all across the world weren't able to identify that there's a plane on the radar.
Exactly.
So right there, it displays a cover-up situation, George. Would you agree?
Yep. Yeah, I sure do. I mean, there's no question about it.
Secondly, when the story came out, you had two guys from Iran with fake passports. It was an illegal operation even to get on the plane. Iran came out and said that it was American propaganda. Right now, we're supposed to have good relationships with Iran, quote-unquote. We're going over there with their nuclear facilities. Why would they accuse us with propaganda against them at this time? That shows that this is false in Iran. They're playing us. Secondly, with Syria, they said they were going to get rid of their chemical weapons, the pact with Russia. That hasn't happened. Now that Russia is betraying the rest of the world, invading Crimea and taking over there, how can we trust Russia? How can we trust Syria? This is headed to World War III, if you ask me, George.
Well, I hope you're wrong, Pete, but you might be right. We are on the cusp of a major war, and you could just feel it. You could just feel it. The Iranian situation, the North Korean situation. I don't know what Putin's up to these days. He's kind of flipped out on us. All these things are just coming down, and gosh, they sure know how to screw a good thing up, don't they? Robert's in Vancouver, Canada. Go ahead, Robert.
George, or Mr. Papa Giorgio.
You got it.
I've always loved that name, and I hope it sticks for you.
Vegas vacation, huh?
Yeah. before I get going, I wanted to make a quick point about being a Coast Insider, if you don't mind.
Yeah, go ahead, please.
One of the things I've been a longtime listener, was a Coast Insider for a while, quit, came back. Always felt that I needed to, be listening to the live show. And then I came back, became a Coast Insider. And, the one thing for me that, if I can stress to everyone, I think, people that listen to your show are all open-minded and, we try to connect the dots. The one powerful thing, if I can say, is being able to go back and listen to shows. And, because you listen to a show, you hear a point, and then, for me, I'm like, well, geez, I heard something about, this in another show, and, what was that?
Yeah.
And being able to take my own time and go back to all kinds of different shows and, listen to points I've heard.
And we're going to open that up for the past 5 years pretty soon. So you're going to be able to go 5 years back.
Yeah, if I can stress to everyone, from using that is just the most incredible, powerful thing. And so from my viewpoint, I just want to stress to everyone, become a Coast Insider.
Well, good. Thanks, Robert.
I think kind of reiterating on what some people have said in the past, the thing in today's day and age that we don't know where the plane is an absolute joke. You're going to tell me that the NASA can track pieces of space debris.
Satellites can take pictures of license plates, for crying out loud.
Exactly. I mean, you know, the other thing is what, about 1,200 777s have been built. And, you know, from the financing guys, you know, the liability standpoint or the marketing of these jets, you're going to tell me Boeing doesn't know everything that's going on live on every single plane, you know, as it's flying to me, would be, in today's day and age, would be ridiculous to think that they don't know that. So, I mean, there's only 1,200 planes. You know,
that's
so
right.
I can't, you know, in my viewpoint, they've got to be controlling, you know, they've got to be following everything.
You know what? Plus, I think they should put cameras in the planes. What do you think?
I think they're there already.
And they're just beaming the video back to whoever's picking it up.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, I mean, I think right now, you know, one of the points I wanted to say is that, you know, this is where I want to head with this whole thing, is that the planes, they don't need humans to fly. I think, you know, the pilots being there are simply just to make the passengers feel more comfortable.
They're almost like big drones all by themselves.
Yeah, I think at any point in time, the planes can be taken over and controlled. Especially, I mean, what, 10 years after 9/11, I don't think there's any way a hijacker can get into the cockpit and decide to try to fly it somewhere. I mean, it can easily be taken over by, you know, control room somewhere else, and they just lock everybody out.
Well, you know what? That's an interesting take, Robert, you know, is it possible that the plane was remote controlled and taken over that way? I've always heard stories that those planes had that capability, that somebody remotely could just take it away from the pilot and say, hey, we're flying this puppy now. And so that's very possible. Let's go west to Kat in Pocatello, Idaho. How close are you to Boise, Kat?
How close are we?
Yeah.
We're clear on the other side of the state. That's
way
where we are.
Way on the other side. Okay.
We're out by Yellowstone Park.
Because I'm in Boise next week at a big event.
Oh, you are. Oh, how exciting.
You got to come by.
Come by. That's 400 miles.
Well, start now.
Where are you going to be?
I'm going to be at a big theater there, and I'm looking forward to it.
It's downtown?
It's all on the website.
Okay. Hey, my dad always, remember old Pearl Harvey?
I sure do.
Good day.
Yep.
My dad always said, he says, I hope I die before Pearl Harvey.
Paul lasted a long time. Oh, he did, though. It's the Egyptian Theater, by the way, in Boise.
Oh, that's right. The old one there.
Yep.
So I'm telling all my kids, I hope I die before George Norrie.
Before George Norrie goes off the air. We want you to last forever.
But I'm the old one. So whenever somebody comes to, I loved your comedy guy. I thought he was going to give us some little zingers there, but he didn't, did he?
No, he was pretty straight.
So anytime anybody that comes to my house for dinner or anything, they've got to bring a joke with them, especially at Thanksgiving.
I like that. That's classy.
So I've got this whole Kleenex box, and I save all the jokes that I cut out of the paper or get from anywhere, and I stick them in the Kleenex box, and then if they don't have a joke with them, they have to reach in and pick a joke.
Are they some of them not funny?
They're all funny, George.
Really good. So you
I don't
you
pick them if they're not funny.
Oh, you're the one who picks the jokes too.
Well, I'm the one that puts them in the Kleenex box that they have to reach into.
You're the screening committee.
Yeah, that's right. So I got two zingers here for you. They're short. So this guy goes in the shop, and his shop's called Nuttin' But Funyuns. You know what a Funyun is, don't you?
I do. What's the other one? Because I'm almost out of time here.
Why do golfers wear two pairs of pants?
Oh, gosh. Can you say this on the radio?
In case they get a hole in one.
All right. Good. Thanks. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, lots going on this weekend. On Saturday, our dear friend Richard Surrett will be with us. Richard, of course, out there in Toronto with a great program in store. And then George Knapp on Sunday with Joseph Farrell being one of his guests, Brad Olson talking about the occult as well. And then I'll be back on Monday in Los Angeles St. Paddy's Day. We're going to talk a little bit about mediums and leprechauns on that day, and then we've got a great program for the rest of the week all in store for you here on Coast to Coast AM. Make sure you're part of it. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Let's go out to San Diego. Scott's there. Hey, Scott, go ahead.
Hey, George. As an old radio guy, you probably remember Long John Neville.
Out of New York, absolutely.
Yeah, he used to work the overnight shift, and he had he was sort of like a forerunner to this show. He always had odd and interesting guests and, you know, intriguing things. Well, about 25 years ago, I found a blooper, an infamous blooper that he did about an adult movie called It Happened in Hollywood. And the idea was for him to play the commercial and then read a little commercial live about this this adult movie. Well, apparently he hadn't read the copy. And
he hit it cold,
and I'm surprised you haven't heard this because it's a classic. I uploaded it to YouTube a couple of years ago, and I sent you the link earlier.
Okay, never saw that. So I'll go look for it. Go ahead.
He's in the studio, and he's got guests in the studio, and he launches into this commercial copy that he's never seen before, and he starts cracking up over the content. Well, he recovers. But then he cracks up again, and then the guests in the studio start cracking up. And then he recovers a little bit more and just soldiers on, trying to make it through what's probably a 30-second tag, you know, about this adult movie. But, I mean, he just completely loses it. And before it's over, he's laughing, the guests are laughing, and it's I've heard it probably 100 times. And it never fails to crack me up. And I'm glad I emailed it to you. It happened in Hollywood. It's on YouTube. And it is probably the funniest thing that's ever come out over the radio.
A classic. We'll make sure is that something, can I replay that?
Oh, yeah. You could play it on the air. There's nothing even R-rated about it. It's just the incongruous nature of him trying to read copy straight, knowing that the sponsor has paid for it, but the more he tries to do it, the sillier he gets. And he is just incapacitated by laughter. It's the funniest thing that I've ever heard.
Okay, we'll dig that up, and I'll play it on the air maybe next week. Next up, let us go to Tacoma, Washington. Rick's with us. Hey, Rick, thank you.
Well, George, how are you doing tonight?
Good. I'm doing okay. Thank you.
Briefly on the Malaysian airline thing, I've heard on different talk shows, some people call in and they get almost incredulous that some entity out there with this type of thought process could put together the planning and do this. And I heard, I think it was just today on the one show, the host said something really good. He said, on September 10th, how many people in the American public do you think September 11th was going to happen, that this Al-Qaeda had the sophistication to pull that off? So that's my statement on the Malaysia thing. For anybody out there that thinks that some of them aren't that sophisticated, they need to reconsider.
That's right.
I wanted to quickly tell you a story. I just moved here from a little town south of Springfield, Missouri. And to try and save money, I took Greyhound. In the end run, I probably could almost bought a plane ticket because all that bad weather blew through around the 3rd of March. So I ended up having to stay in hotel rooms, so forth, so on. You know, and thank the good Lord, over the years, I've started to learn a little more patience. I just kept going with the flow. And I just wanted to share with you and the listeners, I was out there. I don't know who out there has ridden Greyhound. Some of us are spoiled and get to fly all the time. Sometimes I've had to do it. And this, not just this time, but every time I'm on Greyhound bus, it makes you spend a lot of time with people. And some of them you wish you weren't with, but every time I've been on a Greyhound bus, I just meet people with really wonderful spirits. And here all of us were going through these travel issues, all that weather and stuff. People were, and Greyhound is not what it used to be, but anyways, everybody was having travel issues. And about the time I wanted to be upset, I'm meeting somebody who had to sleep in a terminal for a whole night straight, and I'm just griped off because I had a 5-hour layover and then a 6-hour layover I didn't plan. And in the midst of that, I met this gentleman about 10 years younger than I am. I'm in my mid-50s. And we got discussing, and we banged our heads together. Here's something for everybody out there to consider. And things like this get done at times, but if the American public would do this more, he and I agreed greater minds than ours could really come up with some stuff. But how about as many people in America as can get it up together to not shop at Walmart one day, you know, once every month, once every 2 weeks, whatever needs to be done. Whatever, there's a lot of things in this society need some correction. The corporate, the conglomerations of corporations and stuff are really having a big impact on our freedoms, and I think some people don't see it, you know. There's days I know where they try and convince people not to drive for one day or something.
Yeah,
I haven't driven in 10 years. I held a maintenance job where I was on emergency call and rode a bike in nasty weather and stuff, you know. It's like, I hope that's a thought that you can help promote, that there could be some real groundswell things that are peaceful protests that, you know, if we want these corporations to start influencing, because that's who's influencing Congress a lot of times, well, maybe instead of trying to take that back over, which I think is a vain thought, how about if we start as consumers making these corporations understand that they're going to have to work with us because we can have huge impacts. One day, let's just say nobody eat fast food for a day. God, the American public could handle that.
Oh,
you know,
we'd be healthier.
Pick one chain. No fast food for one day. And, of course, I don't have some delusionary thought that, you know, any big number is going to do that. But he and I were discussing how big impact do you think if you could get some minute single-digit percentage of the American public to do that, where it's a stated fact we're going to do this. I think we could start getting some changes in this culture if we think outside the box like that.
Probably. How do you like your move, by the way, from Missouri?
Oh, it's beautiful up here. I mean, I had to leave my grandkids and grandkids and my dog 8 years behind, but sometimes in life you have to make decisions
that affect your
life. But it's really beautiful up here, and I've been meeting a lot of nice people.
Good for you. Do you ever see yourself getting back to Missouri?
Oh, yeah, because of the kids and grandkids. I'm a Coloradoan. My parents robbed me. I'm a semi-native. They had me in Salt Lake City, Utah, and then moved a year later.
Ah, well, you used to all that then.
40-some years of my life I lived in Colorado, so that's probably, here in a few years I'll be able to retire. That's probably where I'll retire. But, yeah, I have a lot of fond memories of Missouri. I was there 8 years, so I've been to St. Louis a number of times. Anyways, God bless you, and I really appreciate your show.
Okay, Rick, you take care of yourself. Do you remember the call I got many, many months ago? And as a matter of fact, I think it was Gina who took the phone call of the individual who was living out that way and didn't really have a radio, a good one. Well, we finally, compliments of Sea Crane, we sent them a Sea Crane radio. I had a couple of them here, and I have proof from UPS that it was delivered. So he's got his radio. Next up, let's go to Jeff in Meridian, Mississippi, east of the Rockies. Jeffrey, your turn. Good morning.
Good morning, George. How are you?
Okay. Thank you.
I even told myself I wasn't going to ask because I already know. I've been listening to you all night. You told everybody you're all right. Unless something changed in the last 2 seconds, I should have.
Let's hope not. Let's hope not.
Well, I'm calling tonight. It's a good show tonight, by the way. It interests me in many ways.
Yeah,
the aspect of the laugh. See, that's what I'm about. I like to make people laugh, and
good,
I love
for
it.
You.
And I've done some stand-up, and I hated it.
Were you
but
nervous?
I did make people laugh.
Were you nervous when you were doing it?
Oh man, yeah. No, it was terrible. I mean,
it's the fear of the joke that no one laughs at.
Well, yeah.
And you're standing
probably
up there.
Probably so. Yeah. I would definitely say so. But I'm a first-time caller. Well, I guess not. I mean, I hit redial a bunch, so I'm about a 1,000th time caller tonight.
Yeah, first time caller in. That's right.
Yeah, that's correct. First time getting on the air. Yes.
Oh, good.
And, but I'm a short time listener as well. I know people say first time caller, long time listener, but I found you, about a year ago, I was heading to Atlanta. And my wife was asleep and we were driving and searching the radio, and I found you on the radio, and I was like, let's listen to it. And, you know, it's about a ghost, identifying the ghost house, you know, is my house, you know, did somebody die in my house or whatever show.
Yeah.
I can't remember the base.
I remember that.
Yeah.
Died in house, the company that had that website.
That was it.
Yeah.
That was it. Absolutely. Were you at the Dragon Con? Because I thought I saw, I could be mistaken, there in Atlanta last year?
I was not. I don't think so.
Not. No. Okay.
No.
Because, you know, like I said, that was the first time I caught the show. But ever since then, I've, you know, tried to listen to you as much as possible.
Do you like the different topics?
Now, so I listen to you anytime I can.
Do you like the variety of the stuff we have, Jeff?
You know, I do. Yeah, I'll be honest. I'm more of a thinker, if you will.
Okay.
Like as far as the
so
space
you like the,
and all that goes.
Space, the heavy science, and stuff like that.
So much.
Yeah.
Especially Neil deGrasse Tyson there.
Oh, he's good.
You know,
he's
those
good.
Those are great shows.
I was disappointed this week. I had Amit Goswami on, and he was sicker than a dog. His phone line was muddy, and I could barely understand him. And we'll try to get him back on a future show.
Right.
He's a good
one. And Mickey, I had the worst time remembering names, but, you know,
Michio Kaku.
Yes, Michio Kaku. That's it. Yes, he's awesome, too.
Great physicist. Okay, Jeff, thanks for listening. I've got time for a couple more quick calls. And by the way, we're going to monitor the situation with this jetliner all week long. I'm in Colorado this weekend taping the Beyond Belief television shows, and then I'll head straight out to Los Angeles. I'll be there for a couple weeks, then back to St. Louis. Then I've got a UFO event in Arkansas, the Ozark UFO event, and that would then put me back to Denver for more TV shows, and then back to Los Angeles. Heavy, heavy schedule, but I'm telling you, this year is really flying by. Let's grab another quick call with Sue in Dayton, Ohio. Hey, Sue, go ahead real fast.
Hi, Dor. I'll be real quick.
Sure.
Previous caller a while back had mentioned about the El Chupacabra.
Yeah.
And he described what because I've studied biosciences, sounded like he was talking about a Quota Mundi. The raccoon type of animal that has been migrating north from Mexico. And he said it had a snout. It was very stealthy in its maneuvers. And he might want to look that up if he's still listening. I have a little joke for you. I hope
all right.
It stumps you.
Go
okay. Well, it's not a joke. It's from a movie. I'll go that far. Okay.
Right.
Here we go. Waiter, waiter, there are snails on her plate.
Oh, my gosh.
That was a jerk. Remember?
Okay.
Steve Martin.
Steve, that's
a
long time ago.
Oh, God. I saw that with my daughter and granddaughter. That I've been floored with that remark for so long.
How old was that? That's 20 years ago, isn't it?
Yeah, because it had Bernadette Peters in it. Harry, forgive me for a while.
That is. Okay. Hey, Sue, thanks. So don't forget, this weekend, we've got Richard Surratt. We've got George Knapp for you. And then I'll be back for the rest of the week with some more, what I'd love to say, riveting programs here on Coast to Coast AM. Follow us on Facebook. We're constantly hitting new milestones there, so like us there. And on Twitter, we send you little messages all the time. And if you need to know my schedule in terms of where am I going to be, just go to the calendar section at the bottom of the homepage and click the calendar, and there I shall be. Lots of events coming up. I'm in Boise, Idaho next weekend. If you're out in that area, come on by. There's still a few tickets left. And here's our pal, UFO Phil.
Well, I never knew I had Martians in my garden, and I never knew there were aliens on my roof. I got shadow people, and they're living in my basement. Got a funny feeling Bigfoot's gonna be here soon. I was so blind before, I was so unaware, but now I swear I'm seeing Sasquatch over there. And I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. Now I can see the light, and I also see a ghost, 'cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. Well, you never knew that your baby was a hybrid, but as he grew, you began to see the clues. Now you know the signs, 'cause you learned it from George Norrie. Even while you sleep, you've got Martians watching you. I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. And I can see the light, and I also see a ghost, 'cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. Good morning or good evening, wherever you may be, whichever world you're living in, whatever century. See the light, and I also see a ghost, 'cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast, 'cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast.
For Dan Galante, Gina Salvati, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesour, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, George Knapp, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.